Pod.
Rugby pod. Hello, and welcome back to the Rugby Pod. It's me, Big Jim, recording late on a Sunday evening as I'm jetting off to Japan at 4 o'clock, and I can't wait. Goody's still laid up in the sun lounger, full of king crab and Peronis and Guinness and cigarettes. So absolutely loving life. So I've got a new dance partner this week, and it isn't the great Dan Bigger, but it's the great, the big Courtney Laws, fresh off a massive shift for Northampton Saints on Saturday night, but also got producer Rob with me as well. Rob, how are you, mate?
I'm good, mate. Good. Feeling energised this week.
Are you?
Yeah. Normally we say "how fucked," don't we? But
well, let's just say buggered. Can you say you're buggered?
Buggered, yeah.
No, there you buggered. Go. Yeah, sorry. He's buggered. Yeah. He's buggered. You're much better than the Bulls lads were. A load of controversy around that. So we'll be dissecting a little bit of that, but we'll be keeping it upbeat. We'll be talking about Leinster's massive win against their biggest rivals, La Rochelle. We'll also be talking about Northampton's massive win against the Bulls. Exeter fronted up for a bit of the game down in Toulouse, but ended up getting absolutely humped. Quins, my goodness me, what a win down in Bordeaux. And we'll give a bit of reference. We'll give a little bit of chat around the Challenge Cup as well. So settle back, relax, enjoy.
And make sure you subscribe on Spotify.
That a boy. There we go. Rob, I think you've told a little bit of a white lie, mate, at the start of this podcast. I've asked you how you are. You texted me earlier saying that you weren't all right, that you were hanging, even though you've not got the kids. Give us a snapshot of what your day looked like today. I know what it looked like, but tell the listeners what you've been up to.
So this morning, I was coaching the minis rugby, obviously the elite under fives, Stockton under fives and under sixes. And then basically I've sat on the sofa all afternoon drinking Moretti's, and then I've just had the Chinese as well. So
the stereotypical northerner. So is the Chinese your go-to? So if like you get an afternoon alone, like I'm trying to profile you here, Rob. So are you wearing a pair of grey jogging bottoms with what looks like tea stains at the front? Like give us an idea. Is that what you're doing? Are you like that stereotypical, like I'm going to say northern slob, but I'm going to get beat up if I say that. But is that what you look like?
Yeah, mate. Yeah, the grey jogs are on. I've got curry sauce dribbled on the front. Normally it would be a Palmo up here. I'm feeling a bit continental.
You're feeling continental. Now, that is a word. Yes, that is a word.
It is a word.
This is all very new to you, Rob. So let's just kind of talk that up as well. Because I know that you've walked into your rugby club and there's been cheers because you've been on the podcast and we're making you a little bit more visible. Which for the listeners, just so you know, producer Rob was very reluctant to put a face and a voice to the rugby pod. He wanted to be in the shadows. I was like, no, mate, we need the northern grit. We need a little bit of humility. We need Chinese on a sofa in grey jogging bottoms with tea spilled all over you. Like, we need you, Rob. But you got some decent feedback, haven't you, for being more visible on the pod?
I have, mate. Yeah, I've had a couple of nice messages this week. I've got 400 followers on Instagram now as well, which is nice. Celebrity status, some might say.
You sound buzzing.
Well, mate, yeah.
Right, well, talking of buzzing, let's bring our... I'm going to call him friend of the show. He's not even a guest because he's going to run the rule over all the matches at the weekend, and we'll also preview the semi-finals as well. What a game they're going to have at the infamous, the famous Croke Park. It's going to be class. It's the great Courtney Laws. Of course, me and producer Rob were just talking about the UFC. My goodness me. I know that you're a big fan.
Yeah, obviously we had the game last night and it was a late finish anyway, and you always struggle to sleep a bit after games. So I was like, bugger it, I'm just going to stay up. Just watched it 6 in the morning. I was quite buzzing that the last fight was pretty quick because I was falling asleep, to be honest. But no, it was unbelievable spectacle.
The BMF belt for the listeners. We can't say these words in rugby, but bad motherfunkers. Let's just say that. I know it's a completely different sport, right? And we have gone back and forth a little bit on it. You know, I'm big into the UFC. I interviewed Dricus du Plessis, the middleweight champion.
Yeah.
It's the number one sport that I've been interested in before rugby, but just they're so unapologetic about what they are, right? The language that they use, the marketing around their sport.
Yeah.
It's epic, isn't it?
Mate, it was class, yeah. And like the show they put on, and it's also the fact that they've got control over all their fighters, so they can actually, it's not like boxing where you can dodge fights. Like they put the best fighters against each other, and that's what the fans want to see. And yeah, that, it was mad, that fight. For Max Holloway to do that, to be winning the fight comfortably, and then to just be like, let's go, let's throw down with Gaethje, who could definitely knock him out. But yeah, take some balls out. That is serious, man. I was hyped in bed at 5 in the morning.
I know. Well, I did it the other way around, mate, because I'm an old man now with four kids. So I got up early this morning and watched it before the carnage of the household woke up. But the press conferences in the lead up, they're talking about money, aren't they? So there's like a bonus, like a fight bonus, like fight of the night, knockout of the night, submission of the night, whatever it is. And historically, it's been $50,000. It could be pounds, but let's say $50,000. And there was this kind of big play that fighters need to be paid more. They're putting their bodies through lows, the aftercare of fighters, and the pressure that's been put on Dana White, who's effectively the head of the UFC. And they went and they tripled whatever, however you convert it. But it was 300 grand, wasn't it?
Yeah, and Max got two. So he got 600 grand from that one fight. Bonuses outside of what he would have got in his contract for the fight. So yeah, he's done pretty well. But Dana's one of them blokes that doesn't care what people say. Like, he honestly doesn't give a crap what anybody has to say about him. He's completely uncompromising on what he thinks. And look, it's worked so far, isn't it? And you know what a business is built.
No, exactly. Look, and I'm not drawing comparisons to that, but I just feel like we need to go down the route of being more comfortable to talk about money, evaluate the kind of risk of what we, more so you now, because you're still playing, put your bodies through, and that has a commercial, that has a monetary value in that. And the UFC have taken risks all along the way in order to push the boundaries, the marketing around it, the pay-per-views around it, and they've gone nuclear in terms of the direction of travel. And like you said, they've got the head of the sport in Dana White, who spoke about the business, actually, that when he got into it, they were at 30 million loss. It was a ridiculously poor investment.
Yeah.
But now they've managed to turn the tide on that. So I think it's a great blueprint. I'm not saying that rugby needs to follow that blueprint, but I absolutely love it. Like the marketing around it, the access as well. Like Adam Catterall, who's a UK journo, been chatting to him a little bit. He just said, mate, the access is insane. Like even the night before the fight.
Yeah, they've made it a product that you can get involved in as a fan and be a part of. And there's a lot of things you can learn. And every sport really should be looking at things outside the box and things that other sports and people are doing to become successful. And there's no bigger or better example than the UFC with their, you know, absolutely just astronomical kind of rise over this last 20 years, really, 10, 20 years. But they have been the fastest growing sport for a long while now. And look, they're selling out every event. They've got the best fighters in the world and people want to watch what they're putting on display.
And this brings me on to the next point, Courtney, because I know it's not a little bit naughty. We've got access to Chasing the Sun too.
Yeah.
And I have small cameos and I've been doing kind of reviews and stuff like that, which have blown up, which is crazy for the people who are interested in that. Almost feeding the South African beast, as it were.
Mm.
But us talking about UFC and then looking back on the Netflix doc that was done around the Six Nations, I would say you can draw comparisons to Chasing the Sun 2 in the way that Rassi, Jacques Nienaber interact with their players, as in the tone of voice, the terminology they're using. I think you can draw comparisons to the UFC. What did you think when you watched that?
Yeah, definitely. And I like how willing they are to let the audience see everything. You know, not just the good bits, but the grit, you know, the hard times, the calling people out, the awkward, heavy conversations. It's full access, and that's what people want to see. They don't want to see a diluted version of it. They want to see what actually happens.
What, are you saying they don't want to see Blair Kinghorn go for a coffee with his missus? I can say that because Blair played well today for Toulouse. I'm calling them out. But, mate, you're 100% right. And just because I know the listeners wouldn't have seen it unless you're in South Africa, on that court, like one of the kind of headlines out of that episode three was around Eben Etzebeth's relationship with Dwayne Vermeulen. And I had no idea. And why would we have any idea that there is that kind of friction? But the way that the coaches dealt with that, like I've been in teams where I don't get on with players, right? They just don't like me. I don't like them. You're not aligned, but you're in the same team, all fighting for the same cause.
Yeah, it's interesting because I don't think I've ever been in a team where I've like butted heads with anybody. Not that I've got on like super well with everyone I've ever played with. I'm not saying that. And there's definitely been boys that, you know, I wouldn't hang around with or whatever, but I've never been in a team where I've like, you know, you've got a leadership group and Sia and Eben and Vermeulen will be part of that kind of leadership group, and to have them, yeah, bumping heads, like I can imagine would be incredibly disruptive for the team. I guess Rassi just did what he thought was best, just got them to work out the best way he saw fit kind of thing. And I don't know how you would necessarily deal with that situation, but that it worked for them, and I guess that's the main thing. But yeah, I can imagine, you know, it's definitely not ideal to have a couple of your main guys pulling in very different directions.
So in the meetings and stuff like that, when they're talking about what they need to do in terms of violence and using these kind of very aggressive words, just give the listeners an idea of what someone like Steve would be, or Eddie, like how would they speak to you? So for you being an enforcer, physicality is central heartbeat to your game. You're almost like a South African coach, like how you play. Do you know what I mean? As in, if you were there, like that's your game, like as in how they play.
Yeah. I'd say it's quite similar. And, you know, we talk about rugby being a physical sport and a, you know, a pretty violent sport and that. And honestly, without that intent, you can't do anything in rugby. Like, if unless you get the physicality side of it right, you're not winning the game. And that is essentially what it comes down to. So every side in their own way will be talking about how you got to play to your strengths, and maybe they're not the biggest team in the world or whatever, but at some point in time, you're going to have to stop them and you're going to have to get over the top of them.
What about when he's calling Peter Steph Tatoy out as well? Like, as in the best player, the alpha of the team,
yeah,
to get up off the floor. How would you be with that?
Yeah, that's pretty mad, to be fair. Considering Peter Steph Tatoy will carry a pretty hefty weight of kind of respect in that team and around the team. And I would probably feel more now that if you've got something to say to me, say it to me. Don't try and make an example out of me, because I've been there. I've had that. You know, you have that when you're younger like that, and then you get through it. And then eventually you get to a stage where, you know, if people want something different out of you, they'll come to you on a more one-to-one basis because you've earned their respect or whatever. So it was quite shocking, honestly. And I can't imagine how he would have been feeling in that situation, considering, as I said, he's a seasoned vet and, you know, one of the best players in the world.
So just for context, courts, for the listeners, because they haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
Apparently, it's going to come to the UK very soon. Rugby Pass TV have got Chasing the Sun 1 coming out in August. Producer Rob Towersby at the URC have got it. Yeah. So people are going to understand. But just for context around that, it's the Ireland game. Peter Steph Tatoy is down, injured, what it looks like. He could be exhausted or whatever. But in the opening scene of episode 3, Rassie's calling him out saying, Petey, you're our best player. You know, you're our alpha. You're our kind of main man. And look at you. Look at, he's calling him out. Like, that's what he's doing on there. And it's right what you say. I would be the same as you, Courts, because maybe this is our culture, right? Maybe this is a cultural thing that it is different for us. And then off the back of that, piggybacking that, Courts, when you're watching that, these are the world champions back to back. You obviously played them in the semi-final. Was there anything where you drew similarities, or you were like, wowzers, they're just getting it right? Like, this is innovative, this is new, this is class.
Yeah, like, I found it pretty mad because they're doing that game thing, aren't they?
Like a computer game.
Like a computer game where they're playing through the game, they've all got their own controllers in their positions and whatnot. I've never seen anything like that in my life. Like, I didn't even know that existed. So that's so out of the box. I don't know how much it would help or what you get from it, because I've never done it. So it's hard to really comment on it. But surely it cannot mimic the game that... You know what I mean? Like, you get pretty tired, things happen, like, you can't react. But look, the fact that they're willing to do things completely out of the box to try and get an edge on the competition is what South Africa do, isn't it?
Well, I didn't even know that they did that. That was what I mean, Court. So that's the thing. I wasn't aware. I thought there was this kind of old school fucking route one, roll your sleeves up, we're going to out-physical you, we're going to out-monster you. I was really surprised by the level of detail and strategy. I don't know why I am surprised, but I genuinely was. Like Felix Jones, he comes into his own in this episode. He's now working with the England team. He, I would go as far as saying, seemed like a bit of a genius in terms of his detail and what he was bringing to that team.
I'm not surprised, to be honest, not surprised at all, especially being under the lights of Eddie and Steve now. These coaches that get to the top level, been at the top level, are at the top level, they have a different level of discipline to the game, and they literally dedicate their lives to it. And the level of detail they give you and that they have is kind of out of this world. It's a completely different level to most coaching. That's why you become a world-class coach, not just an international coach or a good Prem coach, you know, European winning coach, but a world-class World Cup winning coach, yeah.
Would you enjoy working with Rassie and Jacques Nienaber when you saw that?
Look, I would not enjoy spending hours in a meeting room and doing a PlayStation game as myself. No, I wouldn't enjoy that. And they take it incredibly seriously. And that's good. And obviously, like, you should, and everyone should take it as seriously as they want. But I'm relatively relaxed. Like, yeah, rugby's, it's important to us, but it's a game. You know what I mean? We're very lucky to play a sport that a lot of people do recreationally. And, you know, there's lots on the line and you can win a lot of different stuff. But at the end of the day, you're doing what you love and you should have fun doing it. And I try not to take it like uber seriously. So I don't know whether we clash in that area, but I think we get along quite well with our personalities. Like, I find them quite funny, to be honest. I quite enjoy being around the camp. It seems like a cool vibe in that.
Yeah, it does. Let's fuel the beast. Give us an idea of what it's like playing against them players, Eben Etzebeth, Sia Khaleesi, Peter Steff-Tatoy, Dwayne Vermeulen. What are your experiences of playing against them? What mindset do you need to be in? Where do you need to be physically?
Yeah, you always got to be at the top of your game when you play South Africa, but I wouldn't say that, like, they're a different world physically or anything like that. Like, you play world-class teams, and Australia have been there in the past. New Zealand are always there. Ireland there at the minute, and teams can get up there like Argentina and whatnot. And obviously South Africa on their best day are an incredibly physical team, diligent team, a team that know what the game plan is and will beat the drum to the death, you know, on that game plan side of it. And that's what makes a good team. And that's it at the end of the day. You know, if you want to beat South Africa, you have to impose your game on them. If you let them play their game, they'll win. So you have to front up physically, disrupt them and what they're trying to do, at the same time putting your game plan on the pitch and making sure that you're very strict with what you're doing on that front.
Lovely stuff, mate. We've given them enough now. We've fueled the fire enough. Indeed. We've fed the beast.
Yeah.
So let's just go straight into your game on Saturday night against the Bulls. There was loads of talk in the lead up, Courtney, about the travel, 13 changes they made. They thrashed Leon in the round of 16. And then there's this kind of talk about them devaluing the competition. We were talking about it last week, Courts, on the podcast, about the difficulty of having to travel and just what that adds to it. And then you saw the carnage of, like, the 8 different flights that the team had to get. The preparation was extremely poor. What was your kind of take from it inside the Northampton Saints camp?
My take was, it's a very South African thing to do, that whole carnival around it. And, you know, putting out in the press 8 different flights, all this and that. And I guarantee you that it wasn't 8 different flights. And, you know, the players probably all got there very much the same time. And maybe the staff got there at a bit different times and all that kind of thing. But I guarantee you a lot of things there were at least exaggerated, to be honest. And it was a great way of them taking the pressure off themselves, essentially putting it all on us, disrupting us, getting us thinking different things and not quite on the ball. And that's what I was pretty wary of, to be honest.
Yeah, because they were good, weren't they? First half especially, they were physical, like everything that we've kind of spoken about with the South Africa team. But they didn't have some of their best players. Where are you as a player? Obviously, you want to win, right? So you'd rather not play against Kirtley Aronson and Kaden Moodys and these style of player. But there is this conversation around it devaluing the tournament a little bit. Do you know what I mean? And we've I've played 10 seasons in the Champions Cup. For me, it's the greatest. So I wanted to see it valued across the board and for people and teams to bring their very best.
Yeah.
The South African teams have brought this new influence, haven't they? I understand that. And with the added travel and the URC, where they've got to travel as well, there's a lot going on into that mix. What are your views, if any, on that?
Yeah, Steph, I mean, I was pretty disappointed they didn't put their best team out. And then on yesterday, about 1 o'clock, my back went into spasm, like just randomly. So I was toast, mate. I was like, flipping heck, I don't even know if I'm going to be able to play. So at that point, I was like, maybe it's a good job they didn't put their best team out. I was like, oh God, am I even going to be able to get to the game? So I had to, basically, if I can run, I'm going to play. So I could get around. I was very stiff, didn't feel great, but managed to get out there. But look, I always want to play the best team, and I think it prepares you the best for the rest of the tournament. Like, we're going to have to go and play Leinster, you know, and that's going to be, it's going to be a hell of a game. And, you know, I think we would have benefited much more from beating a team that had the best team out and, you know, all the Springboks and internationals and world-class players that kind of come with that.
Is that why you got caught on that line break then, Court? Was it the back?
It was 100% the back, mate. I'd have too easy, mate, if I was fully fit, yeah.
Yeah, I thought you didn't look right, mate. That's what it was.
Yeah, cheers, mate. I appreciate it.
I didn't think anything at all, mate. If I'm running around like you with a bad back, that would have been me in my prime. I don't know if you've seen, but there's someone's put together a YouTube clip of my greatest clips.
Yeah, I didn't have a look at
it. Oh, my gosh, don't. It's embarrassing. No, they're not good. What do you mean? Are they good? No. The comments are horrendous. So I had a minor surgery on Friday and I'm like high as a kite on whatever they give you. And I'm like, someone sent me it. And it might have been producer Rob sent me, and there's all these comments. So I'm starting to, I don't ever reply to comments ever.
Yeah.
But I'm high as a kite. I start rinsing people on there being like, what are you talking about? I said, is he running in slow motion? I was like, the hat trick from India is not there. But yeah, that's what, don't look. Don't type my name in there. But mate, Courtney, no, you're moving
it,
well for me.
The enforcer is called or something like that, isn't it?
Why are you laughing? Don't laugh.
I'm having a look,
yeah. Courtney, you lads are flying. So we've had Biggs on and talking up like Northampton, talking up Sam Vesti, talking up Finn Smith. You know, at the beginning of the season, what was the ambition? Because to fight on both fronts is near on impossible in the Premiership with the budget, with the salary, with the amount of games.
Yeah.
So is there an element of surprise that you're at this point now where you're fighting for the Prem and that you're heading over to Croke Park to face one of the best teams in the Champions Cup?
I don't know if I'd use the word surprise. I think you always go into a season wondering, you know, where you're going to be and what the how the team is going to fit together. And we've had quite a few new players, but most of our kind of core leadership group and stuff like that have been growing over the past few seasons. And it's just been really, really good to see some of these younger now kind of more coming into their prime lads like Ferbs, Freeman. I suppose Freeman's still young, he's only about 23 or something like that. But yeah, boys like Ferbs and Alex Coles, Mooney, like all these young lads have been around for a while and always been really good players, but just struggled to get that really high level consistency, just be able to put it on the park week in, week out. Dingers being one as well, like boys are just stepping up left, right and centre. And then around that, we've got a ton of talent. So it's just been great to see how well these boys are stepping up into the leadership role, into the, you know, the playing role and becoming, starting to reach their potential, really.
Yeah, and that's the kind of standout thing for me when I look at Northampton. There's names that you've not even said there where we've not said, like Ollie Slightholme as well. Like he's not someone that we've been speaking about. He's been unreal
for
you lads as well. Like, who else is there? Like, what is it about him? Like, who else are people not talking about? Seeing Hendy as well, come on, like, saw, like, snapshot of him last season.
There's a few positions there where we've just got so much strength and depth, like, especially our back three. So we've got Slights, we've got Hendy, we've got Rambo, we've got Ferbs to come in, we've got Siebes, and then back row, we've got Luds, Tom Pearson, you know, Colsey can play back row, Augustus, Sam Graham's been classed this season. Like, we've just got so much strength and depth in a couple of really important positions. And then boys like Curtis has come in, Curtis Langdon, and been classed for us. And he's pushing Sam Matavesi. And, you know, we've got a lot of competition for places. And I think that really breeds success and an individual kind of growth. The better you become as a team of individuals, the better team you become, kind of thing. So we're really pushing each other. Training level's been, and training standard has been really good this season, and that is something that we're going to have to continue, and we've still got a bit to improve on, but if we train now, we keep training, we keep wanting to improve, then we're going to give ourselves a really good shot.
And yeah, then you get the dream ticket. I don't know if it is the dream ticket to go over to Leinster, to Croke Park in Dublin. Did you watch the Leinster-La Rochelle game? I don't know how it works now when you've got so much rugby on and stuff like
that.
Yeah,
I couldn't watch all of it. I think I watched the first 20 minutes or so. And then we had to start prepping for our game, kind of thing. I've seen the highlights and whatnot, but yeah, it ended up being a pretty one-sided result, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. Yeah, Leinster, another level course now. And I did a little bit of digging into this because I'm watching it and like, it's easy to take a kind of superficial snapshot on the game and being like, yeah, like Leinster, you look at the scoreline, 40 points to 13, like they hammered them.
Yeah.
So I did a little bit of digging and into understanding, like, where did a performance like that come from? Like, is it La Rochelle not being as good as they have been in the last couple of years? Yes, there's a part of that. A lot of travel obviously involved. They stayed up in Munster and stuff like that. But I'm going to hit you with a couple of things. This is a little bit of insight, Courts, that I got off my mate.
All right.
Now, again, you go back to Chasing the Sun too, and you look at the detail of Felix Jones, what he's doing. He's on YouTube going through the dark web, trying to find them small gains. Like, that stuff didn't exist when I was playing at all. If it did, we probably would have won a World Cup and a few Six Nations off the back of it. But do you know what this phrase is? Passes per defensive actions, PPDA. Do you know what that is?
Passes per defensive actions. The amount of passes you get in before a tackle is made.
Yeah, it is, yeah. And I didn't know this at all. Not that you would need to know this, but this is a stat course which apparently at the strategic end of the game is being spoken about. And, you know, like as in the coaches and the analysis, they go really deep into like these micro bits of detail, right? We as players probably don't need to know that. You just need to get off the line and fucking smash someone, right? That's simple as that. But I think with Leinster, they found an Achilles heel in their game. Like, Jacques Nienaber has found an Achilles heel in their game. There's a quite an obvious one when they came up against La Rochelle's and, well, La Rochelle, basically, the bigger power teams. So everyone's thinking Jacques Nienaber's come in, defensive mindset. Again, going back to the doc, you're seeing these kind of quirky traits that he's got, the South African influence. So, yes, there is that. Yes, there is the Leo Cullen effect, having, I suppose, the confidence and the trust to bring someone like Jacques Nienaber in. But they picked out this stat, passes per defensive action, where they were really low down. They were somewhere like 16th or something in the rankings. And what that is basically was saying that their line speed was completely off. So teams were playing in front of them more. They weren't getting off their line. They weren't making the collisions behind the gain line. And they were really, really far off them stats.
Yeah.
So when you look at it and some of the changes that they made at the weekend against La Rochelle, Will Connors, for example, started ahead of Josh van der Fleer. Like, that was a big statement, right? Josh van der Fleer, World Player of the Year a couple of years ago. Like, yeah. Will Connors comes in, you'd be like, well, there's no chance. And, like, it was a stroke of genius. Also, you look at Ryan Baird, like, in that position. And yes, I know he's a freak athlete, but his collisions behind the gain line, getting off the line. So there was that thing that was picked up about it as well. But digging a little bit further into it as well and asking about the psyche is, I think what Jacques Nienaber has done, he has empowered them like he did with South Africa, using them physical attributes and conversations about challenging the players. Like Tadhg Furlong, he was smashing Will Skelton off everything. His sole purpose in the game, and Tadhg hasn't been at the level he has been a couple of years ago. He was obviously world class, but he was the best tight end in the world. Yep. He was smoking Will Skelton. Apparently he was in that game just to man mark him.
Really?
So I think Leinster, for me, looking at that game, yes, they added on the layers. Everyone's talking about the attack, Jameson Gibson Park, going down the short side, their attack at the line, but it was their defence. It's their defence for me that won that game against La Rochelle. They weren't even in it, they got monstered. So it's a massive statement of intent.
Yeah, definitely. And I think they identified what's La Rochelle's main advantage over Leinster would be size/physicality. And as I was saying before, if you are getting bullied, you almost never see a team get bullied up front and still win the game. So you absolutely have to at least match your opposition there if you want to have a good chance, especially winning at the highest level when teams have often got people who can play behind a dominant pack and punish you. So you stop it at source, and they did that.
Yeah, and they've also got some big units now. You think about some of the, if we call them athletes, like Dan Sheehan, everyone's talking about him, but he's a big man. Andrew Porter's a big man. Tadhg Furlong's a big man. Joe McCarthy is a big man. And Ireland and Leinster have been very structure-based. So everything's been around their structures, around their strategy of how they play, and they haven't had that physicality. They've not had them big monsters. Jamie Osborne at 12 is a big lad as well.
Yeah.
And that's a part of it, Courtney, isn't it? Like, you look at your team, you look at Northampton, and that's why against the Bulls, some of the games this season, like the Saracens, the physical attributes and the size of the human Augustus that you've got, you mentioned Tom Pearson, yourself, Alex Coles, like these are kind of new breed athletes that you need to compete at the business end of the season, right?
Yeah, definitely. It's one of them now, because you've got to be big, you've got to be strong, you've got to be fast. It's like the game is professional and people now are not just picking up rugby when they're 16, 18 and you know, falling into a job. They're literally been brought up by their parents and, you know, past players, and have been in the gym since they're 12, 13 years old. And, you know, these are proper athletes with serious strength, serious power, a lot of times something to prove as well. So, yeah, it's good. It's good for the game. It's good to see. We want more of it, to be honest.
How do you beat Leinster, Courts? Like, what's the the mindset. I know you've got a couple of games coming up in the Prem and stuff like that, but that's like the headline game, is that you're going to have massive support coming over from Northampton. Leinster at home again at Croke Park, like it's a fucking iconic stadium. I know you're not scared of playing against Ireland and Leinster, but like, what do you need to be? Like, what kind of level do you need to be at to beat a Leinster team like that?
Look, mate, I truly believe that if we as a team get our process right, put our game on the pitch, we can beat anyone. We've proven that this season, time and time again, home and away. We'll be looking to do the same again. And, you know, it's going to be a tough game. We're going to have to, you know, we're going to have to be willing to fight to the death. It's going to be a war and we're going to have to be prepared for that. But as I said, I truly believe that this team has got capabilities of beating anybody on our day, as long as we can put our game plan on the pitch and execute as we want to execute. So obviously their job is to stop us from doing that, but our job is to stop them from doing that as well. So it's going to be a hell of a game, I think.
So how many are you saying you're beating them by then, Courts?
Rob, don't do that. Yeah, don't fuel the fire.
I don't care whether it's 20 or 1, mate. As long as we get the win, I'm not bothered.
I had 20 there, Jim. Is it?
Yeah, no, I didn't hear that, because you know what happens? Rob's fueling the fire because Jacques Nienaber and the South African coaches used anecdotes from Irish media before they, I know it didn't affect the game because Ireland won, but they were putting them up, we saw in episode 2. So if Courts fuels the fire and says we're putting 20 points on them...
What are you saying then, Jim?
What am I saying? I'm saying,
and don't just say Saints because Courts is here. Don't just agree with Courts.
I'm not. No, I am. I think the thing is for Leinster. Courts, when was the last time you played Leinster?
A good while ago now, I think.
There you go. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's what I mean. So years ago. So not recently. I wonder if Leinster's mindset, and we know that they're the all-round team, right? La Rochelle was their grudge match that we packaged it to be last week. They're the bogey team. So I'm not saying that Leinster have a mental weakness or anything like that, that they're not going to take Northampton seriously. They are, but they've not played them. And I look at Northampton now, and we've spoken about them all season, like the momentum gathers, you know, you've got some quality players in that team. I think it'll be a lot closer. I don't know if Northampton will win. I don't know. Everyone's expecting Leinster to win, but everything's in favour. And you know what I mean? And this is another thing, Courts. If it's at Franklin's Gardens, it's a different story. Okay, but the travel element to it, the fact that there's big Premiership games in between, you know what I mean? It just adds to it. And like Leinster will rest their players in the URC because this is the tournament they won. And that's why I'm pushing you a bit, Courts, on that in terms of not being surprised. But if Northampton do it, it is massive. It's a massive upset. And I say that with all due respect because of the reasons that I've just given. But I think Northampton are prime now. Like, everyone's fit. Courts, have you got?
Yeah, no, Ferbs is back. The last person we've got to come back is Tom Pearson, but he'll hopefully be back in the next couple of weeks. So, yeah, look, we're picking from full stock. And like you said, yeah, look, we've got no days off. You know what I mean? Like, we've got Leicester this week, Quinns at Twickenham the week after, and then we're into the semi-finals. So, it is what it is, man.
That's what you want.
Yeah.
Hey, that's where you want to be.
We're going to be flying into it regardless. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, and I'd say at this side of the pool as well, Rob, I said this pool, but how it's been done, you've got teams that are going to be at the level. They're not up and down. Like La Rochelle are coming to Leinster, they're putting the best foot forward. Like Northampton are putting the best foot forward against the Bulls. Whereas on the other side of that, it's a little bit different, is it? Because you look at the games, we look at the one game specifically, didn't see Harlequins beating Bordeaux. But then you watch Bordeaux come out the blocks, you're like, hang on, there's something not right here.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know what it is. I don't know whether because it was Harlequins and they just expected to rock up, but no Damien Penno, no Matthew Jalibert. And I didn't see that Quinns performance come in, Court. Surely when you saw that result, you must have been a bit in shock.
Yeah, yeah, it was. And like, nobody would give Quinns a chance in hell, but Quinns are one of them teams that on their best day, they can actually beat anybody. And they've just proven it, obviously. But they do struggle with consistency. It depends what Quinns you're going to get on the day. And if you get a Quinns that is firing in the right mood, then they're going to be tough to beat, man.
Yeah. Again, like going into that game, and Goody did an article for Rugby Pass, and he was talking about teams devaluing the tournament. And he mentioned Bulls, and he also mentioned Quinns as well. And I don't know whether they have devalued it because they didn't pick Danny Kerr and Joe Marler. And he weren't really referencing that. He was just saying because they're the headline names and they weren't starting. But actually, the set piece, so young Finn Baxter coming in, they monstered them, like scrum, line out. And that's what it means. So the talent coming through in England now is well, off the back of that result, as well as you lads, as well, it's the future looks bright, you know.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic to have two English teams in a semi final of Europe. It's great for English rugby, and we need to see more of it, man. We need to keep growing the game, and it's fantastic to see. And I'm sure both of us will be getting a lot of support over the next few weeks. So we'll do our best.
Yeah, Jim, your tweet blew up a little bit, didn't it, about Quinn's being on fire? So the scrum went well, the lineout went well. What else, mate? What else have you seen?
What else have I seen? Well, from a superficial view with the four kids screaming, I saw a team that, like Courtney said, that is up and down was up. They were just on, and it was a free swing. They were talking about it in the lead up. Free swing, no one thought they were going to win. I didn't think they were going to win. I didn't see anyone who thought they were going to win, but like they came out. Chandler Cunningham South, on his first couple of carries, was fucking monstering people courts. And then, mate, after two or three carries, he was absolutely fucked because it was boiling as well. And he's just come back. We've had him on the podcast before.
Yeah.
You've left a big void to fill. Do you think someone like Chandler could fill that void?
Yeah, definitely. Like, he's a very different player to me in a lot of ways. Like, I see him as more of an eight, I think, than a six, probably. I've never, like, played with him or even played against him that many times or anything like that. So I'm not like too clued in on his game. But generally out of six, you want a pretty good line-out jumper. And he's a big, big bloke, you know what I mean? So I'm not sure if he's going to be like a Chesham six, which is probably what England will be playing going forward. But definitely in the number eight spot, with the amount of strength and power he's got and speed on top of it, if he can continue to grow his game, I think we're going to find out his ceiling. Do you know what I mean? Because he's going to be a good runner. He's going to be a good ball carrier. He's going to be able to bang people. But is he going to be able to get around the park for 80 minutes, be a grafter, put it in when it hurts? You know what I mean? Not leave dog legs and stuff when you're tired. And this is not saying he does. This is asking him. If he's willing to fill these parts of his game, that'll be where he finds the consistency he needs to be the player that he can be. If you want to be the best player, it's not just about being able to, you know, bang people and run over people. It's about being able to do it consistently and being able to not put your team in jeopardy, to make up for people's mistakes, to always be on the ball and to be consistent, to be relied on is one of the best things you can be as a player.
Yeah.
And that absolutely takes time. There's no way you're going to be there 22, 23, 24, but you can start developing it as soon as possible.
Mate, that's so cool to hear you say that, because I can get a little bit carried away. Like in the game, mate, that's exactly what it was. It was like two or three monster carries. And when we had him on the podcast, we were like, who's like the beacon? Like, who do you want to be like? And he said, Ardie Savera, and you'll know this.
Yeah.
His repeat efforts are ridiculous, aren't they? Like, his influences on the game.
Yeah.
And, you know, if he's setting his stars, he understands that that's what it is. But I think what he did is he's doubled down on that carry in the Six Nations against Ireland. Is that the one he got injured off as well or not? Yeah. So he's doubled down on that. He's obviously been thinking about that because that kind of lit up for him, didn't it? And then he's just come into the game and fucking monstered a few folk and then felt the 30-degree heat on his back. But, mate, they were good. Like, Quinns were good, mate. Alex Donbrandt was wicked again.
Unbelievable, mate. Unbelievable player. Such a class player for Quinns. What a game he had. He's one of these guys that kind of goes under the radar, probably because he's not had much success with England yet. And obviously, Benny Earl has been world-class for England, so that's not helped him. But he is actually such a consistent player for Quinns. Like, he's always on the money. He's a guy that Quinns rely on heavily, and he just delivers time and time again.
That's what I mean. So him looking leaner, I thought Will Evans was wicked again. Great over the ball. Like, he's managed to take it to another level. But they just look good courts, like, as in Will Porter at nine. I've seen snapshots of him before, but he's up against Luku, obviously international, who missed the kick at the end of the game as well, which was a bit of a sitter, to be honest.
Yeah,
right footer, but in front of the post. But they'll be kicking themselves for that. But Will Port was very good.
I still think even if he knocked that over, Quinns would have probably ended up winning, because they went and got that kickoff again afterwards, didn't they, and stuff like that. So, yeah, I don't think that necessarily determined the game. But yeah, it definitely didn't help them.
Yeah, and that's a game for Quinns, right, where you look at the Prem and the Champions Cup and look, I don't want to say that going to Toulouse is going to be a step too far, but with the history they've got in the tournament and the quality. But for me, everyone's looking at Quinns now because we're getting into the spring, we're getting into the summer. I'm looking at the team, like basically the first team that they've got out now, the fact that they've not got Marla in the squad, they've not got Danny Kerr. Tyrone Green's back as well. Like some of his stats from the weekend, Courts, not that this might mean anything to me or you, but the listeners, 20 carries, 169 metres made, four defenders beaten and a try.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So they are pretty good stats. They mean something to me as well, but he's quality for them, as well as Lewis Leiner as well, who's obviously off to Italy. But just a complete performance. Like, didn't see it coming. Marcus Smith, we're not really talking about him. We were talking actually about his game management courts with Biggs.
Yeah.
And I talking about like the difference between him and Finn Smith. Finn Smith almost has like this complete game where Marcus is like this kind of maverick cut out of a Finn Russell's mould. But actually, he went about his business. He moved the team around. And that was against a quality Bordeaux side. It's probably the difference for him from being the best club player to being a great international player as well.
Yeah, Marcus is one of these people that I don't think people understand how like tenacious he is. Like, he wants to get better. He wants to be the best, without a doubt. I see him all the time when I was playing with him. And yeah, like, there's bits of his game that he can improve, but he wants to improve them. He doesn't just want to be this guy that's just flair and can just pull rabbits out of hats from time to time. Like, he wants to be a player that is world-class. He wants to be a world-class player, and You see the hunger in him when you play with him, and I think he'll continue to develop. So the battle between him and Finn going forward will only improve them both. And so it's only going to benefit England at the end of the day.
Well, you have to give a bit of a tip of the slipper to Exeter, don't you, Jim?
Yeah, first off, they were great. Of course, you would have been asleep, mate, if you stayed up all night watching the UFC. But I thought, I've got to watch it. Do Exeter have a chance? And I put it in my mind that they didn't have a chance. And the reason is, just for the listeners again, they've got basically got Anton Dupont. But you look at their team that they've got, is just, they've got Malvaca, Cyril Bai, Dupont, Roman Intermant's back. You've got Blair Kinghorn, Peter Ackett. I mean, I could name every single player. The fact that Julien Marchand was on the bench and Thibaut Flamont just shows you the quality they got. Thomas Ramos as well. And then you look at the Exeter team courts, just full of young lads.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, full of young lads, a team that's in transition. And I asked you the question, and I know that your team and that Northampton are further on in terms of development, but you've got to remember, this team made the semi-final last year of the Champions Cup, but with their team courts, so what is it about Exeter that make them so good? Is it Rob Baxter, the quality of players that they've got coming through, the game plan that they have, which is quite simple?
Obviously, they've got a good crop of players, don't get me wrong, but I think their coaching staff with Rob Hunter and Ali Heifer as well. So I was actually, they brought me through the academy, Ali Heifer and Rob Hunter, and then Baxter has obviously, so he brought Exeter up from the Championship and were obviously the first team to really be able to transition to become a fully fledged Premiership team, go on to win a load of stuff. So I think he understands better than most the effectiveness of real kind of teamwork and everybody being on the same page, pulling in the same direction, because they do, not to be disrespectful to them and their players, but they do really punch above their weight at the minute, and they have done for a long time, really. So yeah, I can only imagine that is down to the coaching staff and what they're doing off the pitch.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. They went at half time, they were 1 point down.
Yeah.
Like, Jack Willis scores a try at the end. Here's one for you. Jack Willis, unbelievable courts.
Yeah, it was good.
Mate, he was unbelievable, like ball in hand. So I don't think he got one turnover. I think he might have got one or two. But like, who cares about that? His carrying ability. And this is the thing, right? I know it came out last week and Bill Sweeney and the RFU have doubled down on saying that players playing in France can't play for England. When you look at him, I know the back row is probably well covered for England, but how you can ignore someone playing in a Toulouse team that's keeping Thibaut Flamont. They could have went with Thibaut Flamont today, who's a French international, but they've gone for Jack Willis. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if he ain't good enough to play for England, I don't, or even have the opportunity, that's a talking point as well, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yes, it's tough, man. And there's ways you can get around it if you don't want like your younger talent leaving and stuff like that. And similar to what Wales did when they put a cap limit on it or whatever and that kind of thing. There is compromise, but it doesn't have to be one way or the other. So I hope that something changes. And to be honest, I don't even know if Jack would qualify. You know, I don't know how many caps he's got. I don't think he would, but at least you'd have the option to come and make your mark in England and then be able to change what you're doing, do something a bit different without, you know, being constrained to just Prem Rugby.
Because that's the thing, with someone like Jack Courts, I don't know what he gets paid, over in Toulouse. I'm going to put a number on that. I'm going to guess maybe 350 plus.
Yeah.
All right, 300, 350 plus.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way of fitting him in the cap, is there, in the Prem? Like, what team does he go to, like, that he's going to get that? He's just not going to get that. So it's almost like the impossible challenge.
Yeah, and obviously, if he goes back to Prem, yeah, he'll pick money up from England, but he'll still be devaluing himself. And it's not guaranteed money if he gets an injury.
Well, you're relying, look at Zach Mercer. Yeah, yeah. Zach Mercer goes back to Gloucester and doesn't get a sniff.
Yeah, yeah. So what was the point? You know what I mean? So, like I said, I think something's got to change. I don't know when or where or what, but there is compromise to be had, and I think we should look into how we do it.
Yeah, I feel like we're getting all political when I get you on course, just because you blew up last time you were chatting. But, mate, we'll keep it positive. We'll stay upbeat, because a couple of standout performances from Exeter.
Yeah.
Emmanuel Feoboso again. Now, we've spoke about him before he got capped, before he knew he was English or Welsh or German, whatever it was. Mate, that lad's a superstar. But even against Toulouse, he's just a phenomenal. I know it's easy to start fanboying players, but, mate, his metres after like collisions, his metres after contact, his leg drive, he's a freak, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. He is, and he really is. He's one of the best athletes you'll probably find in the probably rugby at the minute, and he's up there in terms of athleticism with the likes of, like, Adi Savea and people like that, who are just so powerful. And Slights, someone like Slights is up there as well. You know, boys that can just are so strong, so fast, so powerful. Freeman, similarly, and you're going to get more and more of these kind of people in the game. But he does stand out. And, you know, hopefully he just continues to go from strength to strength. Touch wood, he can stay fit and just continue to play and develop as a rugby player.
The big question is, though, Jim, can Quinns go over and do a job against Toulouse? In Toulouse as well. I know it's in the football stadium, but it's still in Toulouse.
A bit weird that it's in the football stadium. I don't get all that. I understand it's meant to be a neutral ground in the home. I don't know. This is just rugby, mate. But actually, it might be quite good. Yeah, that's what we do, Courts. That's what we do. We just change it up, you know? I don't know. I would say no. But after that game in Bordeaux, like I've said, like Courts has said, like many people say, you've got a team that's up and down. But Toulouse are one of the most decorated teams in the tournament. You can't see them not making a final. But is there this kind of soft underbelly of French teams, Courts? Does that still exist? I know you're going to Brive, which is a good move. Hey, you announced it on the pod as well.
Yeah.
But there still is that. There's a, you know, you chat to anyone in France, like there is, and Biggs was talking about it as well. He's like just there up and down emotionally.
Yeah.
Could they slip up to a Harlequins, or do you think that that is just a step too far?
I don't think that Quinns are going to find Toulouse on an off day, no. That's down to the players they've got in their team, the character that Dupont is, the quality of coaching and stuff like that. I don't think Quinns are going to find them on an off day. That doesn't mean they can't win necessarily, but they're going to have a few things go in their favour, you know, I'd imagine. And they're going to have to be on it like they've never been before.
So to wrap it up, lads, who makes the final?
Oh, I would love to see, because Courts is here, a Northampton Toulouse. And I say that because it's at the Tottenham Stadium, right? So you think of the Northampton faithful travelling down. I don't know how you get to Tottenham from Northampton. It's the M1. You definitely, there's only one motorway to London.
Yeah,
there. Yeah, straight down the M1. I just think, my point of view, I think you've got, it's almost primed to be a Leinster Toulouse final. But would I put my mortgage on it? I wouldn't. You know, would I put the Mrs.'s Ford Galaxy on it? Yeah, I probably would, because I bloody hate the car. It's shite. Of course, what car have you got? What family car have you got?
We got an Audi and we had a Bentley.
Oh, yeah, but you ain't fitting. How many kids have you got? Four like me?
Yeah, no, the Bentley's got 7 seats, mates. And
Beck, we're getting a Bentley.
and we got a Q7 that's got 7 seats as well. So we're doing all right, mate.
Courts, mate, they ain't getting four Courtney Law's kids in the back of a Q7, mate.
You are, mate, I promise you.
Really?
Yeah,
see. Fucking hell. I look like a right idiot when I rock up in the Ford Galaxy. I was hoping someone would steal it. They ain't stealing them, they're stealing Range Rovers. Right, so if you had to put your Bentley on it, do you think that, I'm not going to ask you on your game, but Quinns or Toulouse?
Yeah, you've got to go Toulouse, but I'm not counting out Quinns. Can't count them out.
You can't count out Quinns. You can't. I won't do it now. Rob, who you got? Who's your final?
Said to lose.
Another boy.
Purely because Courtney Laws has sat on the phone with us. And I'm easily swayed. Challenge Cup then? Who watched it? Anyone?
Of course, I know you would have been all over that. I did watch a bit of Gloucester, but I actually forgot massively about what happened in the game. And this is no reflection on the Sharks and Edinburgh game, but my missus took a video of me sleeping while it was on in the second half.
Right.
Because I thought the Sharks had run away with it. So I do feel bad, because I've been chatting to the head of brand, because this is crazy, right, the tournament, the fact that the Sharks are going to be playing their game against Clermont in London at the Stoop.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, this is the thing. Stay positive, Jim. Stay positive. So we were just talking about basically getting Eben Etzebeth and Bongyun Mbanambi in the studio to promote the game.
That'd be good.
Two days before. But there's a big South African contingent. But no, Gloucester on Friday night. I'm going to say a big win against Ospreys. Like, Gloucester are now in a position where they won the Prem Cup against Leicester. They then went to Welford Road, beat Leicester. The Premiership's obviously gone for them. Like, we all know that. But, you know, if they come away from this season having won the Prem Cup, and then Challenge Cup finalists, like, Gloucester have come good. And this is, I don't know, it's a hard, was it? Because I've almost belittled the tournament a little bit, Courts, because it's like being in the plate, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like being in the plate, but you've got to be in it to win it. And Gloucester have got a good team. They've, you know, Zach Mercer's just come back as well. You know, Lewis Ludlow as well, big friend of the show, big mate of mine as well. And they've had a tough time with the Premiership and with changes. They've struggled to lock down a 10. Adam Hastings is obviously going back up to Glasgow. But yeah, I'm happy for the lads at Gloucester. That's a good win against Ospreys. Weren't a great game, but it is what it is.
Yeah, definitely. And there's still some good teams in that tournament, you know. You've got to be punching well to go and win it. And if you do win it, then it's, you know, something to be celebrated, definitely.
Yeah, it's a big shout out as well. I mentioned Adam Hastings, sick bit of skill that producer Rob put up on social media, and that's flying now. I don't even know what it was. It was like around the back, through the leg, kick through the legs,
knock, and then he actually knocked it through somebody else's legs, which is pretty good as well.
They were like, did they score? I said, they're fucking no matter if they scored. Like, it was a sick bit of skill. Yeah, it was unreal. So big shout out to Adam Hastings, big shout out to the Skips, Lewis Ludlow as well. But Carreras got 18 points off the boot, and they've booked a home semi-final. So it looks like Gloucester are going to go do something in that tournament this year. And then Clermont absolutely hosed Ulster. So weird seeing Clermont in the Challenge Cup. But yeah, 33 unanswered points in the second half. And this is a weird stat. I don't know what you think, Courts. I'm a little bit older than you, but we played in the same generation.
Yeah.
But Clermont are going for their fourth Challenge Cup win. Like, does that sound a bit weird or not?
That does sound weird, yeah.
Joint most Challenge Cups, tied with Quinns.
So they got knocked out a lot then?
Yeah, well, they got knocked out of the top one, didn't they? Like, they always remember, because I remember Ben Kayser, who I was at Leicester with, we were not joking about Clermont, we called them chokers.
Right.
And he came up to me, he was fuming that I said it, like, genuinely. Like, I said, I was like, oh, mate. So he's that passionate about it. But yeah, Clermont absolutely hosed Ulster, and they're going to be playing against the Sharks at the Stoop. And the Sharks are looking good, make quality players. We went all in on South Africa, but they've got Bongyun Mbanambi, Mzoli Mapimpi, Eben Etzebeth.
Will they put their best team out?
Yes, because the URC has gone for them.
Right.
So, yeah. I think it's gone. They're coming back. But again, it's a hard one, isn't it? It is the elephant in the room, right? So you think of how congested, I've not got access to the fixtures right now, but you think the Sharks having to come to London to play a Challenge Cup game. Do you know what I mean? In between the six, it's a long way.
Yeah.
It's a long way for the Challenge Cup. But yeah, they had a good win against Edinburgh. And we'll give a shout out to Grant Gilchrist, 200th cap.
Nice.
200th cap for Edinburgh. Mate, quality player, understated player, Grant Gilchrist.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Fair play.
Don't sleep on Benetton either. It's Italy, good Six Nations, Benetton flying.
There we go, Rob. Don't sleep on Benetton. There we go. Don't sleep on Benetton. No, they beat Connacht that game, the Sunday, the graveyard shift. And yeah, they're in the last four for the second season running. So stuff's happening at Benetton. They've got Gloucester, tough place to go. But friend of the show, Seb Negri, skipper, Michele Lamoureux, Menoncello. They've got some quality players, Benetton.
Yeah.
Of course, what's your view on Italy? Like they are definitely improving. They've got some freak athletes as well coming through.
Yeah, no, it's class. It is class. The Six Nations was a bit tough for them as well, because they obviously really should have beaten France. And, you know, imagine if they'd have won that game as well. That's, you know, they're up third, second?
Yeah, third.
You
know what I mean? Yeah, third. Yeah, it's crazy.
Imagine seeing Italy in third or second place in the Six Nations. That would have been bonkers, mate. So yeah, they're absolutely, without a doubt, improving as a nation, and things like this only help the game, the funding, getting the players better equipment, staff, all that kind of stuff. And then hopefully, obviously, this is years down the line, the new generations of players come in.
Yeah. Do you still think, right, you know, we're talking about, we're flip-flopping in between competitions. Now we've got a break between the quarterfinals, 2 weeks, then the semi-final. It's just a bit bitty. Something that I speak about, it's not meant to be negative, but because it blew up last time when we were talking about the state of the game a little bit, like, is that something that you think about or not, that you'd rather just roll straight into a semi-final, get up to Croke Park and just stick with one tournament? Or do you like the fact that it flip-flops between a few?
No, I think I prefer it to kind of flip. I think your semi-finals and your finals should be towards the end of the season, like further on in the season, like more of a spectacle, do you know what I mean? And kind of build up to it. And also, it does give you a different challenge as a team, being able to get up for a massive quarterfinal, and then you've got a Prem game the next week and you have to stay focused. So it's quite good in that aspect because you have to be on the money every week, which is good, I think.
Yeah, what about the South African teams being in? I'm an old romantic, I am. So I still call it Europe, but I have to call it Champions Cup.
I don't really get it. I mean, Europe is Europe, isn't it? And I'm not saying this because I don't want the teams in there, but why are we calling it Europe if it's not?
It's hard, isn't it? Well,
what
I know,
can
it
I
is.
What can I say? It is what it is. But it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I know. But that's what I mean. Yeah. But you have got influence. And I think players are now talking about the structures of the game, like the money in the game. We've kind of flip-flopped back and forth about English lads playing in France and they can't play for England. Yet you've got like South Africa players dotted all over the country, yet they go back and play for South Africa.
Yeah.
You know, Arnie Surveyor's talking about the lads playing in Japan and that they need to open up the doors to have players play elsewhere because that's what South Africa do. Do you know what I mean? There's a lot of kind of stuff, which is great because there's loads of talking points. But I just think you're well placed and influential to be able to be, look, you know, these things, these conversations do need to accelerate. Because when you're going to breathe and you're in the Champions Cup, you ain't wanting to go down to the fucking balls, are you? And play altitude.
No. Yeah, mate, yeah. And it is, logistically, it's a flipping nightmare. Do you know what I mean? Like, it just is. It's part and parcel the reason why we've not had teams putting out the best teams in this top 16 in these quarterfinal phases. Obviously, now, going into the semis, you're going to get the teams putting out the best, but really and truly, you should see the best players available every game. And the reason it's not is because, you know, it's logistically, it's not really feasible. And on top of that, like, some of the fixtures, like, especially for the top 16 that have been replayed, like, we beat Munster last, we won every game in our pool. Munster won one game at the pool, and then they've got an opportunity to come to our place and knock us out of competition. I was like, how does that make any sense whatsoever? And obviously, you've got a lot of motivation if you've just been being at home, you're hurting, all this kind of stuff. And it's not that long ago that happened, kind of thing. So you're in a pretty good position to go and do that. So I felt personally pretty put out about the fact that you've just beaten the team away from home, and now you've got to play them again in a knockout. It didn't really sit right with me, and I don't think the fans wanted to see all the such similar fixtures. I think there was only one fixture that hadn't been played already, or that you wouldn't see outside of any other competition, kind of thing. So, you know, some rejigging needs to be done, I think.
Well, Courtney, now you said that, mate, they're going to rejig it probably for next year because you're that influential. But you'll be at brief, so you might not reap the rewards of it. I know. How much are you looking forward to that course? It's a big old move. I'm sure it's a decent deal for you as well, but you'll want to finish Northampton on a high. But kind of just give us an overview of the choice of going there. Might know the reason why, but also how excited you are to go and try something completely different, which brief will be.
Yeah, no, I'm actually super excited. Maybe a bit naively excited because obviously I've only been at Saints. It's all I know, and I'm kind of part of the furniture there. So I've got no idea of like what different club cultures are like, what it's going to be like to go down there and play in a different team. But regardless, I'm very excited. If I'm honest, I'm not thinking too much about it at the minute. I'm still, you know, pretty determined to do a good job this season, and hopefully down the end of the line we'll end up with something to put in the trophy cabinet. But at the end of the day, I just want to do us proud as a team, regardless if we win anything or not. I want to play my heart out for the boys, give the rest of this season to the club that I've given my entire career to.
Yeah. Are you quite emotional? Are you an emotional man? like with your players?
No, I wouldn't say I'm emotional. Like, I love being with the boys, love being around the club, around the lads. But no, I'm not like a super emotional person. They mean a lot to me. I like people to know that, but probably won't shed a tear over it. But that's not because it doesn't mean a lot to me. It's just because I've got a cold heart.
Yeah. But it is, looking at you, it is all business, right? You're going out there, it's business, it's your job.
Totally.
Yeah.
And it's not like I'm leaving Northampton for good, man. Like, I'm going out a couple of years, you know, have a little adventure, do my best for Brieve, come back to Northampton. My boys are going to go to boys' school, same school I went to. We're going to fit back into Northampton. I'm still going to be involved in the club in some way, shape or form, and things will quickly get back to normal, I'd imagine.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we'll get you on anyway before the Champions Cup final, you know what I mean? Or the Prem final or something like that. So this isn't the end. This is just until we speak to you again, Courts. But, mate, it's class to have you on, as always. Massive win for Northampton against the Bulls. Flying in the Prem. Mate, things are going well. So we'll be rooting for you, Billy.
Thank you, mate. Appreciate it.
Legend, Courts. Cheers, mate. I'm off to Japan.
That is sick.
Yeah, so I've got Eddie Jones. I'm interviewing Eddie.
Oh, unreal.
Mate, I'll just leave you with this quickly. So Eddie Jones, his one thing that he needs a briefcase with yen in it to be handed over to do the interview. He's Alfred me.
Serious?
I swear to God. I swear. That's the his only way he'll do the interview is with
a
briefcase.
It has to be a briefcase.
Yeah, he specified a briefcase.
How are you going to fill a briefcase? Are you going to put like one yen notes in it or something?
We're like, going to make, yeah, we're going to make content out of it. Exactly that. So he's getting, it's going to be jingling around.
Oh, good. That is class, mate.
So it'd be good. I'm looking forward to going. So I go at 4 a.m.
Nice, mate. Have a safe journey anyway.
Yeah, legend, mate. Awesome, legend. Mate. I might get choked out by some K1 guys as well, so we're going to see a few of the kickboxing stuff as well.
Oh, sick. That'd be class. No, I look forward to seeing it. I'll check it out when you put it up.
Yeah. Fantastic. Cheers, Courts.
Nice, boys. I'll catch you in a bit.
Couple of shout-outs to finish, Jim.
All right, Rob. Do you want me to go first or you?
You go first because it's a mouthful, the first one.
Okay, well, it's a historic one, Rob, because this week for Bradford and Bingley, they were a bank, weren't they, back in the day, Bradford and Bingley? I don't know.
They were, yeah.
They were, there you go. We know our northern banks, of course we do. But the Bradford and Bingley RFC, who are taking a senior team and a vets team as well, all the way to Scotland, to my hometown or city of Edinburgh Accies, on Saturday the 20th of April. Unfortunately, I'll be in Japan. But they are here to rekindle what is allegedly the oldest England-Scotland club game in the world. So good luck to the lads from Bradford and Bingley. And I'll be cheering on the Edinburgh Accies, obviously. But enjoy. It's going to be a hell of a bus trip, I tell you that. Regardless, win, lose or draw.
Imagine the bus trip all after that, Megan. Another shout out. Quick one here to Joe Curley, his dad Dave, and his father-in-law Muttley, who are all going to watch the Cyprus v Malta game on the 4th of May, actually out in Cyprus. So Joe says that his parents moved there from England, but his family are actually Maltese. So it's a bit of a grudge match within the family. Dad's supporting Cyprus, which is his new home team. So he's changed allegiance. A bit like you, Jim, back in the day.
That's fine.
That's fine. That's absolutely fine. But Joe is sticking to his guns and supporting Malta. So let's hope that Muttley, the father-in-law, can separate them if it all goes
is
down.
Is his name Muttley or not, really? Is his name Muttley or is that just banter?
I mean, that's what the email says.
That's what the email says. Well, hey, Muttley.
These are blokes who want to watch Malta against Cyprus. So you know you like rugby when you're going to watch that, don't you?
Of course, yeah. He's definitely called Muttley. Yeah. We'll have a good one, lads. Right, and the last one for the week goes out to Swanage and Wareham, under-14s. Hopefully they're not listening to this podcast, a little bit too loose, but if their parents are, they have just won the Dorset and Wiltshire Cup final, 21 points to 19 against Bournemouth. Bet you used to live in Bournemouth for a bit. All the parents and coaches are properly proud of the boys, describing them as the most amazing team and always supporting each other through thick and thin. So proper rugby values. Well done to Swanage and Wareham.
Well, thanks, James.
Well, thank you, Roberto. Big thank you to Courtney Laws. But the biggest thank you's got to go to all the listeners, as always. Don't forget to check us out on YouTube, Instagram, Twitter. What else is there, Rob? There's TikTok now as well, isn't there? Are we on Snapchat or not?
OnlyFans.
Are we? Are we on there?
Yeah. I've got that picture of you in the changing room at the Army I'm going to put on.
Hey, I look decent in that, to be fair. But anyway, you can check us out on all of them platforms. But the main one is to make sure you subscribe on our beloved platform of Spotify.
Yeah, make sure you subscribe on Spotify. They pay the bills.
Yeah, they do pay the bills. I did say Spotify as well, but we'll just say it three times. So Spotify, Spotify. But it leads me to say, Rob, you're going to do one as well this week, Rugby Spod.
What do I say, though? Do I say Spotty Pod, or should I make up my own?
Make up your own. Whatever you feel. So let me do it again. Rugby Spod. Go on, Rob. Where's yours?
Spotty Pod, Pod, Pod. Oh, I bottled it. I've just done the same as Goody.
That's fine. See you later. Konnichiwa. I'm off to Japan. See you later.